Hello and welcome to another episode of Hitchcast. This is Michael Piacenti with Hitch Partners, joined by Brett Starr, my partner here at Hitch Partners. And we have a fantastic podcast for you today. We have wonderful guests, Martin van Horenbeek from Zendesk, as well as Monica Savia from Zendesk, who will be talking to us about a very interesting topic in the world of CISO. Just as a reminder, the Hitchcast podcast is really a series that highlights a sort of rapid evolving world of cyber and physical security executive talent, some of the trends and scope that we are seeing change very rapidly in our world today. And so we really want to add value by bringing a great set of diverse leaders to speak with the community. Staying true to our core values as an organization here at Hitch Partners, we wanted to provide the opportunity to hear these practitioners and the industry experts with no hype, no sizzle, and just substance. So without further ado, welcome Martin and Monica to the show. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much, Michael. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks.
Great. Thank you. And just before we even get into sort of the history today of what we're going to speak about, which is program management and chief of staff topic around the CISO world of CISOs, maybe you could give a brief overview of Zendesk, a little bit about the company, and then we can kind of jump in from there.
Sure. Happy to. Zendesk is what we call a service-first CRM company. We build customer relationship management software, but always with service and customer service first in mind. And really, when you think of how we were founded and what we're here to do, it's to improve the relationships between our customers and their customers. So to really enable those relationships to become more effective and more pleasant as well. And we do that across over 150,000 customers. We have about 3,000 employees in offices across the globe.
That's great. And We talked about a really interesting concept, which is that you have looked into the expansion of bringing in program management values, and Monica is going to be speaking to that with us. But as the CISO, I'd love to understand a little bit, and I think the audience would love to understand sort of a brief history of your organization, and more specifically about your two roles, maybe before we get into that the hot topic here. But I would love to hear from both of you and a little bit more of the history there about your organization.
Great. Well, when I started out in security, I've actually always worked in teams that had really solid and good program management support. And in fact, for much of my career, I had the title program manager, and I really cared about building out solid management of projects and processes across organizations that I work in. So when I started at Zendesk in March of 2018, at the time, we had a fairly normal setup for a security team. We had a team that was focused on compliance. We had a team that was focused on application security and a team focused on security operations. I think that's a very typical setup for a lot of companies our size. And we had one headcount on the books that we were planning to hire for at that point in time, which was an architect, a very senior technical role that was going to help us solve a lot of the technical challenges that we had ahead of us. But when I looked at the way that the team worked, both internally and with our partner teams across the business, one thing that was pretty clear to me was that it would be very difficult to hire a senior technical contributor who would actually be effective. And the big reason for that was that we had a lot of challenges in terms of process. There were some silos, never intentionally, but always because of the way that things had grown over the years. And there were some challenges engaging with some of our partner teams. Like, they weren't always 100% clear on what we wanted from them and how we wanted to get to the end goals that we had in mind. So from my history and my perspective working in other teams, I realized that one of the first gaps we really needed to address was to bring in a program manager. So at that point in time, we started recruiting for a program manager. We knew that we needed someone special. Like, we didn't just want someone who was going to change programs and run them according to specific milestones we had in mind. We were looking for something a little bit more than that. And I remember very well, while we were recruiting, I was actually on a plane in Europe. I was flying, if I'm not mistaken, from Geneva to Tallinn, Estonia. And I got off the plane at 11 o'clock at night. I rushed my way over to the hotel, and I had an interview, which turned out to be the interview with Monica for our program manager position. And during the interview, Monica made one thing very clear, which was that she was looking for a team to support where she could influence the culture and not just simply run programs. And from that, the rest was really history. We hired Monica as our first senior program manager on the team, and then she built that into the new role that it is today, and then something bigger. And I'll actually let Monica talk a little bit about the things that she experienced and sort of how her role evolved when she started.
Thanks, Martin. I remember that interview. It was a very dark hotel room, and I was very confused about who I was interviewing with. So I joined Zendesk back in March of 2019 and really came on with that mission in mind, that we were trying to understand how to build a security organization that was dynamic. Because part of building out programs and part of the reason why that's the structure is wanted is so that we can kind of continue to execute and continue to meet our objectives. But one of the things that I think Martin and I aligned on from the very beginning was this idea that as business complexity increases and as the security industry becomes more and more complex, it requires a really well-run organization in order to be able to pivot quickly to adapt to those changes that are necessary to ensure the security of Zendesk and our customers. And so what the first thing we started doing was taking a look kind of holistically at the security program. And we started by kind of analyzing what were the capabilities we had, what are the technologies we have, what are the processes that are currently run, and where do those relationships really sit, and really take an honest approach and a growth mindset approach towards those processes. Because as Martin even mentioned, as teams grow organically, they tend to grow into a way of doing things and may not always question that way of working until there is I guess another perspective brought into the mix. So a lot of what we focused on was going in, looking at the business and figuring out how we could make the team run more effectively and efficiently. And from that route, be able to then drive and create a planning process that would help us align on our strategic initiatives to be able to actually start meeting our objectives and our goals and our regular cadence. Through focusing on the team itself, on the culture and the way that it's run, really helped us create consistent business cadences that helped us develop like transparency and trust across the team, that helped us collaborate much more effectively. And then that led us to becoming a more, I think, effective organization as a whole in our ability to adapt to change. And I think that came especially into play this year with 2020 and all of the challenges that we've been facing.
Monica, that's awesome. What did you, Martin, initially envision the program manager role to be versus a chief of staff? Weren't you thinking about a chief of staff at first? And then how do you distinguish between the two?
That's a great question. When we got started, I think I definitely was looking more for the typical program manager role, as in how do we get rigor into executing projects. And then when Monica joined the team, I started realizing that there was a lot more potential here, because Monica was actually doing things I would not expect a typical program manager to spend a lot of time on, things like figuring out how to communicate. And that was when I think Monica and I both realized that what she was doing was cultural change. And for me, two of the most critical things to do as an organization are to get your culture right, which enables individuals on the team to make their own decisions without worrying about authority and can they actually make this decision. And second, to tell a really comprehensive narrative around what we're actually trying to achieve. And the narrative is always a little bit of a problem, because when you look at a company, everyone kind of walks into security or any other topic from their own perspective. And they focus on the things that are important to their team. And they always have a need to defend and stand up for the things that they need to get done. And that's a very important perspective to take. It helps hold people accountable. It helps make sure the right things happen. But what is actually very important for a security team is to have a narrative or a storyline around what you're doing as a team that people can believe in and sign up to. And I think in many companies, it is actually the CISO who set that storyline. Like, you come in, you help others understand what the role of the security team is and where it fits in. And I think when Monica started, she started very much looking at the culture. How do we actually plan better as opposed to how do we just plan? And then the second piece that happened was that I started realizing she was questioning the narrative when it wasn't clear. And she was bringing up questions around the story that we were telling as a team. I'll also never forget this one day we were working on vulnerability management, which is a pretty big project in our organization. And we were collecting data to be able to show to the rest of the organization. And I see Monica looking at a slide deck, and I see her actually being a little bit frustrated. And she turns around and she's like, I don't think these numbers really add up. And that was when I realized, like, well, this is great, because she's also questioning and rebuilding the narrative that we're building around what needs to happen here. And it was great and really positive for me to have someone on the team who was sort of questioning the bigger question around why are we doing these things? What are we doing? And she really helped set the tone there. And that's when I think both of us realized that Monica had really taken on a chief of staff role as opposed to a program manager role, which was what she was originally hired for.
That's great. This is Michael again. I just wanted to ask how you feel, and maybe this is a question for both of you, but just your initial view of the hire and how it's evolved. The impact that Monica has had since joining, you gave a great example of the numbers not matching up, but how has the function grown and what's sort of been the impact then?
So when Monica started in the chief of staff role, we actually put together a document with the different areas that we wanted to focus on and that we wanted to get right across the team. And a lot of that were more functional things that we wanted to change. So when she started taking on the role, we actually had a slightly different title for it. We call it Senior Manager of Strategy and Planning. And both strategy and planning, I think, are very descriptive of what I actually look towards a chief of staff and what I expect them to do. Strategy is all around second guessing and questioning, is the direction that we're going into the right one for the company? How do we align with the needs that we have? Planning is all around how do we enable the team to plan? It's not just about doing the quarterly plan. It's not just about enabling a team to build an individual plan. But it's about setting the framework, how we can enable engineers to do their own planning and then contribute to the greater whole. So those were the areas where we definitely started. I think where it evolved very much is actually in that narrative that I mentioned earlier. So for instance, today, when I put together a briefing for any level of senior leadership, Monica is my go-to person to get feedback on whether the message is going to land and to get a second perspective. And I think that has truly helped us build better relationships with senior management and even the board of directors. We've just gotten better at communicating, and that's in to a great degree because of the work that she has been doing, looking at all the details first and then extrapolating that and building something bigger on top of it. Another area where I've seen the chief of staff role have a great impact is actually in reducing siloing. So any organization, any engineering organization by nature, I think, builds in a little bit of siloing because you always want to have a scope of what you do, and you don't really want to grow too much outside of that scope without doing it in a plan-driven way. Otherwise, teams get overwhelmed. So siloing is a little bit natural, I think, in many teams. But where the chief of staff role for us has really helped is increasing that communication, both between the leaders of these teams, but also actually at the lower levels between the team members themselves. I think if I were to ask the team, what is the most meaningful change that we've made in the last year that has actually made everyone more effective at their work, it's actually that planning framework that allows individuals in specific sub-teams of security to directly work with each other instead of every time having to go up the ladder, figure out with their manager, how are we going to work with our partner team. They now know they can reach out because they have some mechanisms that are very similar and that translate across those boundaries because they're set from Monica as her chief of staff role. And now I don't want to make it sound like it's all hunky-dory and perfect. It is not, like, we have many challenges ahead of us, but I do think there's been some really meaningful change there.
And I think, like, just to add on, even in those two areas, I think that what has helped us be able to kind of break down those silos, and it's the planning piece and the structure and the cadence there that we've created, but it's really about how we've been able to create predictability. And I think that has really allowed us to have a lot more trust be built within our teams, because we know what our we know what we're going to be communicating to our teams and how they're going to be receiving information nowadays too. So like my favorite thing to hear when I'm creeping on a Slack channel is someone will have a question and then they'll be like, oh, I don't know, but I'm sure we'll hear about it in the next all hands. And that to me is a great symbol of there's trust in the structure and the communication channels that we've built, that we're going to be transparent, and it allows us to be able to run more effectively when we're not spending this extra time kind of second guessing the basic responsibilities and expectations that we're kind of holding our team to. So I definitely agree that both on the planning side, we know that we have a beginning of plan, and we're not just like hunking down this final created plan for the team to then just go off and execute. We really build into our process this prioritization discussion, this aggregation of content, and then we build out even a rollout, and as we begin executing a monthly and a quarterly review and reporting cadence, so that we're creating transparency and trust along the way about what we're doing and how we're meeting our objectives.
Digging into the mechanics of that, how are you able to establish that trust with all the constituents? Because none of these people report to you per se, do they?
Nope.
Yeah. So how are you able to work with them so seamlessly?
Yeah, I think it's so like the what you do is the why you do it, and the what you do it is normally pretty clear. The how you do it is all the art, I think, of the chief of staff role, right? I think we're the first thing is people know why I'm here, and my job is to help our security organization run more effectively and be better. And I think there's a lot of goodwill and trust that's built in with that. I also have, through kind of the way I work, I have built up a lot of trust through meeting the commitments that I make, right? I try to do my best to execute and follow through on the work I do in an excellent fashion. And I think at the end of the day too, it's the how, right? It's the fact that I have a high EQ. I go in and I listen first. I ask questions and I seek to understand multiple perspectives, and I am able then to create guidance for people, and I think in a way that helps them kind of evolve their own way of thinking more so than a directive manner. So if anything, it becomes, I try to model what I want them to be able to do as well, right? Which is being able to be a partner and be collaborative towards driving towards the best solution in the room.
One of the big topics right now in the world of security management and just cyber overall is this sort of expansion of being a great translator from tech, very highly technical issues to business risks. And I'm just curious, in your particular role, what are some of the best practices in kind of establishing that communication, you know, outwardly from the security organization? What are some of the things you've been able to do with your involvement? And maybe that's a question for both of you, but I think people would be really interested in hearing how you're able to do it at Zendesk.
Yeah, I think it comes down to even what Martin mentioned before, right, which is about the narrative. If you understand the why, and if you can communicate the why of what you're doing, then most people can understand it at that level, right? If you get into like the tactical what specifically, and then even deeper into the how you're building it out and what technologies you're using and all these different configurations, you're going to lose a lot more people. So what we tend to do is think about aligning first at the why level, like why are we actually solving this problem? Like, what is this problem and why are we solving it? And that normally is the first place to get buy-in and to have that really good, challenging conversation. And from there, once you get, then you create structure to a place where you allow trust to be built in your teams to be able to, for them to figure out the what. But oftentimes what you'll see is you'll get into situations where you'll be in cross team conversations or big meetings where people aren't clearly aligned on the why. And that leads to all sorts of wasted time and added confusion at the end of it. So one of the things that we found has been really helpful is framing anything that we bring up to the teams first in the perspective of why are we here and what does this mean for you, right? Like, so it's actionable too as well for the individuals that are participating with us.
I think the only thing I'd add to that is that from my perspective, the way I look at communicating security in general, there's a couple of principles that I kind of try to live up to. The first one is that I always start with the assumption that we hire very smart people, and if we provide the right data, they're going to make the best possible decisions for the business. And I think in security, we sometimes lose light of this. You often hear this referred to as assume competence first, because most of the people you work with are actually really smart. They just have slightly different things that they're thinking of when they make the decision. So we focus on making sure that the right data is available to the right people. The second thing is that we're always going to have to bring people along. If you tell someone they have to patch X, they will not understand why, and they might begrudgingly do it. But if you actually tell them about the risk, if they don't go ahead and do that, it's a very different story. And by bringing people along on that story, you get them bought in, and you actually educate them for the future. They're not just going to solve the problem today, they're also going to solve the problem tomorrow. And then finally, depending on who you talk to, you often hear this referred to as being either opportunistic or responsive. But I am a really strong believer that you should never let a great incident go to waste. So use every time something goes wrong to help educate the people around you and bring them along on your journey. And I think if you implement those three principles, you bring people along down the path, you give them the right data, and you leverage things where it doesn't go too well to educate them, I think you're very successful at communicating the security story, and there will be very few people who will say that what you're doing isn't valuable and isn't worthwhile. So it's all education in that sense.
Yeah, and Martin, even more to add to that, I think we both really believe strongly in like the power of relationships, right? And being able to have champions in the business for you, and the way that you're able to build those relationships are important. So I think even our security council is a really great example of how are we able to like translate information. We kind of started from a place of not necessarily having the deepest of relationships within our product development org's executive team. Security at Zendesk sits outside of R&D. And we kind of took a look at it and approached it from a perspective of how do we build this better relationship so that we can go out and continue to make the changes that we need to see for the business. And we started by just gathering data and putting together a story and a narrative, and provided each product line executive a view into what their own security landscape looked like. And we just started by providing and giving and building a relationship and building trust, right? We shared their role information, security champions, where they were with their security reviews. And it was only after a few of those instances did we start building on that content to then say, hey, here are the discussions around challenges that we're having. Here is how you can help us. Here's what we're rolling out. Here are some escalations. And it's really evolved to a point where we're able to now, I think like a year and a half later since it's been rolled out, like have regular touch points with these exec teams that are that we can use to that are aligned with the vision and what we're trying to do as a security organization, that can then further translate that into their own orgs and deeper into the engineering organization.
Yeah, question for you, Martin. How has the position evolved and how do you think it will change over time?
It's a great question. The way that the role has changed a little bit is that Monica and I actually, as a partnership, have been thinking through what type of functional work actually fits into a chief of staff role and what does not. And this is an area where we've kind of gone in different directions and tried things out. I think where we've sort of landed is that as a role, the chief of staff position actually sits by itself. It's something very unique. There's a lot of cultural change, and you can't really do that when you manage a lot of processes that actually perform specific work within the team. However, there are some where it actually does make sense. Areas where we have invested in the past in this chief of staff organization, which is really what it's turning into, is for instance, security awareness, because we felt that security awareness needs to bring to the table all the different components of security. And as a result, this was a great place to put it, because both Monica has terrific insights into the different problems in the different areas that are actually fairly unique across the team. So she can bring that into the security awareness role, which is separate, but reports into her organization. And she can really help make sure that all of those different viewpoints are heard. So that's one area where we've looked at expanding the chief of staff organization to cover a little bit more ground. Another area where we're thinking similarly is data analysis. So today we don't really have a dedicated data analysis role on the team. And when I say data analysis, I'm really talking about collecting the right data to be able to share with different business owners, to be able to share with people outside of the organization to show how we're doing. We do have a lot of data analysis that happens within functions, but we don't really have anything separate. And I think the chief of staff organization in particular is uniquely suited to take that wider perspective, make sure that we're collecting the right data, that we put it in the right context and understand what is actually important or not. So I think the pattern that you're seeing is that everything that is related to that story that we tell as a security team is a really interesting space for the role to take on more responsibility. One more that I would highlight, because this is, I think, something fairly unique that we do in the organization, is actually around education. So I mentioned earlier that originally the team had some silo challenges. As I said, nothing that was particularly poorly intended. It was just how the organization had grown. What we tried to do to address that, and what's been very successful for us, is actually to build an education initiative for the security team, in the security team, by the security team. And what that means is that we actually run an academy within the team where individual team members go and build content around specific problems that we're trying to solve. One month might be vulnerability management. Another month might be intrusion detection. Another month might be emotional skills that we need to be successful with our partners. So not just technical, but both technical and how do we become better leaders in the organization. And really drive that forward and provide that training to everyone across the organization. So we make sure that in our organization, people at least have a wide view of what the other teams do and how they're approaching these problems. And what we found is that the chief of staff there also has a very big role to play, because again, it is that story of what are we doing as a team. And so even though individual engineers or analysts build the training, it's really important to bring in that higher level perspective on how to make it most successful for the organization. So those are some big areas where I think there's a lot of opportunity for chief of staff roles to grow into specifically, and where especially at Zendesk, Monica has taken a big leadership role on the team. Monica, I don't know if there's anything from your perspective where you see the role growing even further.
I was thinking of it from kind of like what makes that chief of staff role like successful too as well. And a lot of that is due to like the partnership, right, that you and I both have and the shared vision and what we're trying to build and do together. And the other part of what I see the chief of staff role kind of evolving into is becoming like that mini COO type role for the security organization, right? Where you're able to create a focus on ensuring those business cadence and rhythms are running effectively so that the team can then run effectively. And I think consistency is something that is so hard to prioritize in this ever-changing world. And it's incredibly important to continue to foster trust and transparency and just like effective execution, really. So I think that there's continued cultural change aspects there even further that we would be building out through the programs that Martin mentioned.
Just a quick comment. It's very clear to see the chemistry and the cadence that you've both built up with one another. You can see that this works. And one of the things that struck me about, you were talking, Martin, about the academy, is we do have a huge deficit in the security community for having very strong professional mentors within our subject matter within security. And it's just great. I just want to make the comment that it's great to see both of you really driving that in your organization. And I guess I would love to see that, you know, deeper in other organizations, but I hope everyone can take that away as a point here, is that it does take a partnership and knowing, you know, where to, if there's boundaries, if there's not boundaries, you know, what do we need to be focused on? But really, I'm sure there's a group within your organization that are being both probably professionally mentored and also mentored through the academy. And it's just great to see the different skill sets that you're able to provide them. So, you know, kudos to you and the team for doing that. And then a question on top of that is, you know, there's a lot of CISOs that listen to our podcasts, and we'd love to know what advice would you give other CISOs? And Monica, what would you give other PMs and chiefs of staffs out there about how to consider this position, how to think think about putting it together and constructing it appropriately. I'd love to know your advice that you would give others listening out there who are considering this as a structure.
As a security organization, when you first start considering hiring, let's say, your first program manager, or you're much more advanced, you're looking to hire a chief of staff, I think the first thing that I would recommend is diagnosing. So what I really did when I joined Zendesk was I diagnosed for 90 days. I came in, I told everyone on the team, the next 90 days, I am just going to listen. I'm not going to make any decisions. I just want to know what you're thinking. What are the challenges that we have? And I met with everyone on the team. I got a ton of useful information on what some of the challenges were. And from that diagnosing, it became pretty clear to me that one of the bigger challenges we had was actually the execution that Monica mentioned earlier. Truly understanding, like, who is doing what, when, and how do we all work together to get us to the right goal. And that was how I really decided that we needed a program manager first and not the technical resource that we had planned for, which we also needed, but it was just lower priority. So really doing that diagnosis and understanding who you need for the role is truly, truly critical. And even though going into the interviews, I did not go in thinking we need a culture changer. I deep inside did know that that was actually the change that we needed and wanted to make. We didn't just want to bring someone in who was going to do the PM work. We wanted to bring someone in who was going to set the framework so everyone could PM themselves. Yeah. And they had a direction to go into. So that was the lesson that I learned. I don't know if that is the right lesson for everyone. That's why I would say take the time to really think things through. When it comes to a chief of staff, I think what is very important is actually to talk to a few chief of staffs before you go and do your hiring. Because I know my assumptions on what a chief of staff role were very different than most people who are actually in the role and who are planning out what they want to do and how they want to grow. And part of that is from working with different chief of staffs that have very different perspectives. And some of it is just from assumptions. Like, I know I am an engineer at heart. Like, I think in terms of deliverables, I think in terms of solving technical problems. And that actually isn't what a chief of staff does. They help with things that are not my strength. So I think talking to a few and understanding where they're coming from, reading a good book about it, probably all make a lot of sense and will make the conversation with future candidates a lot easier. And I actually, in a way, got lucky with this. Since we hired Monica as a senior program manager, and she already understood the role of chief of staff because she had done similar work in the past. So she was actually able to educate me on it. And I think when you set out saying, I'm going to hire a chief of staff, you don't have that background. So I got very lucky, and I would encourage other CISOs to really think about what it is that they want that individual to do and how to hire for it.
I'm so happy you went first, because I have a lot of what you said actually totally resonates and was the direction I was going to give feedback to, from like if you're a program manager or if you're a chief of staff, if you're looking, or if you're someone who's looking in entering this space, it's a lot of the same thing. I think there was a few benefits that we had where I kind of came in first as from a program management perspective. So I had that same, let's go in, let's analyze the situation, let's get a sense of the landscape, and from there figure out what we actually need to be able to build. Because I think a good foundation is so critical and important for any type of execution to really be done well. And I think that there is, so even for me, I think it was a little bit difficult understanding and really getting to the place of, okay, at what point am I a program manager, and at what point am I really entering into that chief of staff role? And I think that questioning is a very healthy and healthy and productive thing to do, because from what Martin and I both wanted from a chief of staff role was someone who would look internally at the organization and then expand back out. Whereas I think program management was much more about cross-functional, high-level connections across different business functions. And to Martin's point too as well, like, there's so much legacy information about what a chief of staff role is, and so many different models that are out there, that really there isn't a one size fits all thing. It really is a relationship, right? And it's about it's about finding like a leader that you want to work for, that you share a vision for, and that you can help create an organization around. Like, even when we think about how success is measured for a chief of staff, like, for me, I don't actually think outside of like the functional aspects of security awareness and training, I like the fact that my goals are Martin's goals, right? Like I don't have an agenda and a structured kind of bias that I'm trying to achieve and run after. I'm really focused on like our pulse surveys and the effectiveness of our organization and how those things run. And that to me, I think drives a really good partnership between what a chief of staff role is and how they can partner with their CISO as well.
We've seen chief of staff and program management mean very different things to very different organizations.
Totally.
Right. And you guys have defined it in a way that obviously works for you, and other CISOs should take note. And that, you know, that's why we wanted to talk to you and kind of share this information about how you guys are running the railroad here. But yeah, there is, as you pointed out, there is no one size fits all.
Just a last question for both of you. And, you know, if you're an old guy like me and you remember what CIO organizations did in the beginnings of the PMO, but we saw many CIOs who kind of evolved their PMO organization. Often it was a smaller group of experienced program and project managers that sort of led a recipe or a methodology to ultimately help those CIO driven programs outside the org. So take again that translation that we talked about earlier of technical implementation into a business value. Do you feel that we're heading that way in a PMO like function in the CISO world? And if so, why and where is this going? I mean, what are your predictions as to as we see the CISO role in this particular area expand? I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
So at Zendesk, we have a shared PMO, which means we have a program management organization that is shared between all the functions. And in fact, when a function wants to staff a program manager, they have to spend the money and they essentially fund the central organization to bring someone in that is going to support their team. And one of the things I think we're going to see more and more of within security, or I personally feel we should see more and more of, is that security teams actually leverage those shared organizations. Because I often hear of security teams that want to staff the program managers in-house within the security team. So they have more control over what the individual works on. They can have more tailored processes and so on. And I actually think we benefited tremendously from leveraging the shared organization. I'll give one example. When I started, we had a real challenge figuring out all the different things that were happening across the business and understanding how we needed to tie into them. If we had hired a program manager inside security that would have to go and rebuild all of those relationships and connect with every team, understand what they're doing, that would have been a very costly and time-consuming affair. Because we were able to hire a program manager who reported into that central program management organization, we benefited from all the relationships they already built. So we really sped things up and did things that honestly we wouldn't have been able to do maybe 1 or 2 years out in the first weeks after hiring this particular individual. Now, a lot of it does depend on what does a program manager do. And I think within security teams, there are certain processes that we might want to operate that look like program management, often I think at a more junior level sometimes, but also sometimes more senior than a typical program manager focused on a particular area. So it all depends on what you want the program manager to do, but I would very much advocate for leveraging what already exists in the business to help build relationships as opposed to trying to build things yourself. In the end, every CISO is going to have to make decisions based on the needs that they have. And so they could go either way, but I think it's valuable to consider leveraging existing frameworks as opposed to always creating them from scratch. I think that is different than the chief of staff, which is really a function within the security team, building out and growing out the security team. But for program management organizations, I would always recommend looking at what's in place first and then potentially expanding within the team on specific functions where the individuals will actually benefit from having a closer tie to the security engineers and analysts.
Yeah, that network of relationships is incredibly powerful at Zendesk through our current centralized PMO, but it's also a centralized, like it's a center of excellence around program management. And what that means is with that comes templates and forms and structure and ways of working, where really then as a new program manager coming into the company, you're equipped with the resources and how to do things the Zendesk way. And also you're equipped to be able to help teach your team, right? I think that's one of the big values of having a program manager come into an organization is the education aspect. This isn't just someone who's coming in just to run things and do it for you. They're there to be able to share in the skill set and to be able to teach others on some of the basic fundamental aspects of successful project management so that they can then go off and run projects on their own too in the future. And I think one of the things we always talked about is program management should always be looking at working themselves out of a job, right? Because you should always want the people that you support to be so successful and so aligned and so together with it that they don't need program management anymore. Of course, that's not necessarily the reality, but it is, I think, the viewpoint of being able to share in the experience with the people as well.
Well, Monica and Martin, this was absolutely fantastic. I learned a lot. I'm sure Brett learned a lot. And hopefully our audience will certainly find the benefit. We can't thank you enough for your time. And I appreciate you joining us here at Hitchcast. So thank you for coming. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for having us, Michael and Brett.